Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to Garden Better. I'm Adam Woodhams, gardener and horticulturalist, and with me is Jenny Dillon. Hey, Jen, you're a gardener, you're a horticulturalist. What have we got coming up on the show this week?
Oh, well, this week we're going to talk about summer lawns and power tools.
Ooh, love power tools.
Oh, you're such a man, aren't you?
I just love toys, Jen. Simple as that. Well, let's get out there on the lawn.
Okay. So what do you think we should be doing first?
Well, look, your lawn should be looking pretty good by now, shouldn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's our fantasy picture, that it's looking lush and green and we've done everything right. But I think reality is most people haven't done everything they need to. I know I sort of don't often get round to doing all the things I'm supposed to. We run out of time, don't we? That's life.
We do run out of time. But as I've said before, and this is probably going to be a refrain, we also have neighbours.
Yes.
And my neighbours all around don't look after their lawns. They're full of weeds. And what happens? The weeds flower.
They come to your place.
They come to me.
There is one advantage, though, of neighbours that don't look after their lawns or gardens very well. It sets a lower bar for yourself, so it's much easier to make yours look spectacular.
But you know, that's so true. My lawn outside the front of my house is the only bit that's green in the whole street.
Yes. It's fascinating. So I remember we filmed some fertilizer videos, how-to videos at my place going back a few years, and we ended up fertilizing the living daylights out of a couple of our lawns because, you know, you're doing take after take after take. Oh, and I'm thinking, oh, well, this is a test for, you know, they claim that this fertilizer doesn't burn even if you over-apply it. I thought, here's a test because we've put so much on. And I have to tell you, that summer we had the best-looking lawn in the street because it ended up so lush and so strong and everybody else's lawns were dying and parched. Everybody thought I was watering my lawn, but we'd actually built so much strength into it. It was able to survive through summer. And that, I think, is the best point, that there's a lot you can do now to still get your lawn looking good and surviving across summer.
Yeah. Well, feeding it is a really good idea. At this stage, the lawn is like a teenager. It's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
It's growing and it needs food.
Well, and they are fast growers. That's what it comes down to. Most of the grasses that we use as lawn grasses in Australia are warm season grasses. So that means they make their growth over the warm times of year. So you do need to be feeding appropriately. And if you use a quality fertilizer, it doesn't necessarily matter when you apply it. So you can apply it before rain. It can sit there for as long as it needs to. You don't have to water it in. You just wait for some natural water and it will feed it. Obviously, you're going to get better results if you do have that ability to water it in. But feeding is one of the best ways to build the strength in your lawn to get it survive across the summer periods. Now, mowing. This is one of my big things. My dad was one of those funny people. We used to call him Ron the Rambo Gardener because he loved the garden, he loved the lawn, but he was very much I am in control type person, you know. So he'd get out there and really exert his dominance over the lawn and garden. And he was very much in the frame of mind that you, in summer, mow the lawn low, really low.
Wrong.
To the point where you scalp it. And it's just the wrong thing, isn't it, Jen?
Yeah. You should only cut about a third of the blade. And it's so much nicer to walk on as well.
Yeah. Well, I describe that's over the years I've heard so many descriptions. Oh, you cut it to this height, you cut it to that height, and at this time of year you cut this much off, and this time of year you cut that much. I actually say these days, go for foot feel.
Yeah.
For what feels nice underfoot mm-hmm. is round about the right length for your lifestyle. It's as simple as that. You know? And if you're leaving that grass at that nice length over summer, you're in fact protecting the grass from the heat because those little leaf blades end up working as umbrellas. Like umbrellas, protecting the roots, protecting the soil, helping retain moisture. So it is important to keep your lawn at a normal sort of length or that, as I said, that foot feel length over summer. Now, and a big one for me, I always suggest to people in the cooler months, switch off mulch mowing because there's that increased possibility of fungal problems if we get rain and damp conditions and the cool conditions. But this time of year, absolutely critical that you switch back to mulch mowing because that's protecting the roots of the plant, all those tiny little bits of leaf that have been cut up into super fine pieces. They become like micro mulch and they help to keep work as an insulation just the same way as mulch does on your garden beds. Yep. They do that on the,
and
on
they
the roots
return,
of the plants.
They turn nitrogen back to the soil. But I think there's just one thing you have to be careful with. If, say, like me, you have your neighbor's weeds growing in your lawn, that's not a good idea because you're going to end up sending the seeds back into the soil.
Well, it is a good time to be looking at treating those weeds as well because a lot of the weeds that are appearing now are warm season annuals, so they are making rapid growth. They're very easy to spot. I'm not big on using weed killers in the lawn because often they work by partially poisoning your lawn
your
as
own
well.
Lawn, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm, although it sounds like a chore, get out there and actually physically do the weeding and get most of these weeds out. And it's effective. It's instantaneous. There's some very good long-handled weeders that you can use for getting even big weeds out of the lawn. So get on top of those lawn weeds now. That's the ideal time to do it. And really it's your last chance to treat bindi before it turns into a problem.
It's a monster. You know, my poor little puppy, I take him for a walk. He doesn't go for a walk. He goes for a hop.
Well, it's the summer lawn hop if you forget to take care of bindi, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's people often launch a revenge attack on their lawn once they've got prickles in their feet because they think, oh, I'll get rid of this bindi now, I'll nuke it. But
it's too late.
The plant's already dead. Those little prickles are the seeds. Mm. So it's finished its life cycle. There is no point on spraying your lawn if you're feeling the prickles in your feet.
Mm.
Physically remove some young plants if you see them, but you're just going to have to wait until next season and wear thongs.
Yeah, do it late winter. That's the time.
Yes, yes. And there's also a lot of grub movement at this time of year, so you can get those different lawn grubs that there's some underground, some above ground, so do keep an eye out for any dead patches that may appear because they can be caused by grubs quite often.
Yeah, there's mainly two types of grubs that affect us in Australia. One grows into a beetle, another one grows into a moth. So you know you have a problem if you have a lot of moths.
Mm.
And once you get to know the life cycle of these creatures, it's very, very short. Once they mature, their sole purpose in life is to mate and lay eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
And they lay thousands of them that turn into the grubs that can destroy.
And they tend to strip your lawn almost overnight, whereas the lawn grub, the giveaway you've got the lawn grub or the curl grub as it's often called, is if you see a dead patch in your lawn, if you try and grab that grass and it comes straight away from the ground, that's the curl grub underground because it's chewed all of the roots off. But now I know that sounds like a lot, but it's not really that much, is it, Jen?
No.
No. And you do all this and your lawn's going to look schmick over summer and that's what we all want, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Where would we be without power garden tools, Jen?
Mm.
Much quieter, right? The look on your face, I know, that's what you're saying to me, isn't it?
Every rubbish day they all come out, all the power tools.
I know. I reckon we'll have a talk about battery gear in a minute because I actually want to roll through a little bit of the history of power garden tools because it is quite fascinating. But I reckon that all contractors these days should have to use battery equipment. Because there is commercial grade battery equipment, and I reckon they should have to because it's so much quieter.
It's just appalling, you know, and it's pollution.
It is. Yeah. It's noise pollution. It's urban pollution. It makes people angry. But did you know? I dug up some facts when I knew we were going to be talking about this.
Yeah.
The first lawnmower was human powered And it was invented in 1830 in England, of course, by Edwin Budding. And it was your typical cylinder mower, which is basically there's two types of lawn mowers.
Who cut the lawns before?
It would have been done by hand with scythes and things like that. So it would have all been done manual and, you know. So, but a cylinder mower, there's two main types of mowers that you still see them today. A cylinder mower is basically where you have a big cylinder generally at the front of the mower that's got blades on it. And a rotary mower is your typical lawn mower where you have that disc with some blades on the edge of it underneath underneath a deck. So that they're the two different types of mowers. But you know what the next big leap was in the development of lawn mowers in the 1890s? Steam.
Steam.
I just love the concept of a steam-powered lawnmower. But the irony was they often used things like petrol to heat the water to create the steam because they hadn't built the internal combustion engine at that stage, you see. Mm. So I think that's actually kind of funny.
That is rather curious.
But a steam lawnmower, how cool is that? And apparently it took hours for them to warm up, to build up a big enough head of steam. So if you wanted to mow at midday, you'd be starting to fire the mower up at about 7 a.m.
So is this in England again? We're talking about bigger states.
Oh, absolutely. It'd be the bigger states in England, yeah. But then it was the rotary mower, which is the cousin of what we know today. It was the 20s and 30s when they started to invent that. But they were still enormous because they didn't have those compact engines that we have today, which came with two-stroke and then later with the development of compact four-strokes. But it was Australia's own Victor that in the 50s started to mass produce the lightweight domestic model of a rotary mower.
That's when we begin the great suburban dream, isn't it?
It is, really. That's, you know, the white picket fence, the Victor mower, which was affectionately called the peach tin because apparently the earliest models, the prototypes, they used a peach tin as a fuel can.
So
In fact, if you talk to really old nursery people going back, you know, in the earliest days of wholesale when it became retail nurseries, they used to sell plants in peach tins and things like that before plastic pots were around.
Oh, that's so cute.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. But so really what it comes down to is that home garden tools, power tools, have been around since petrol engines became viable and portable. And really we started a lot of them. I remember from my childhood everything was two-stroke, you know, so the mower was incredibly smoky and stinky and noisy and, you know, ran with that whining sound and you'd start it up and there'd be this enormous eruption of smoke came off it. And
wow.
But a big evolution from that was when four-strokes, because the difference is a two-stroke is where you put petrol – you mix oil and petrol yourself, whereas a four-stroke has a sump that you put oil into and you just run it on regular petrol. So it's kind of like a miniature version of your car engine. But they came up with a way to make them – the problem with a sump, of course, is that you can't really turn it upside down and stuff, but they came up with ways to be able to do that and make four-stroke portable for things like line trimmers and chainsaws and your favourite blowers. But now what we're heading towards, of course, is batteries are becoming viable for so much gear. And
I've been my battery mower for 15 years.
That's a long time.
It's still going. It just chugs along and you never hear me.
Yeah.
I can sneak up behind you.
Well, see, that is the beauty of it. That they are very quiet. You can mow without needing earmuffs, which is a fantastic thing because they all fall under the decibel rating of what you actually need. And you don't disturb your neighbours as much, which is to me fantastic. As I alluded to before, I reckon commercial operators should be using this stuff. It should be, you know, if you're in a strata, you write into the terms of that maintenance agreement that they have to use battery gear.
What a good idea. Yeah. Because all around me is strata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the difference it makes. It's much easier to just have that on and off. That's the thing that I really like with battery gear. You know, rather than having to go through the whole rigmarole of pulling or whatever to start, you basically are just switching
a button,
instant power, simple as that. It's got maximum rev straight away. There's no warming up. There's nothing happening there. Always have a second battery on charge. Because I've got a bigger place than yours, so I tend to go through batteries. You know, when I'm doing the edge trimming, I'll generally exhaust two batteries.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, we're an acreage. So by the time you do all the boundary fences and yeah. all the bits.
Well, see, my trim is electric to Orts battery, yeah. you know, and it just goes.
It is quite surprising how powerful they are, isn't it? They certainly have comparable. I haven't used my really good quality four-stroke line trimmer for about 2 years now. I do everything with my 82-volt battery line trimmer.
Right.
I think we need to explore this area a bit more thoroughly. One company that has made enormous advances in the area of battery gear is Ryobi, so we thought we'd get one of their experts in for a chat. Wade King, Senior Product Manager from Ryobi. Welcome, mate. Now, battery gear, there's a lot of old school gardeners out there. They're pretty skeptical about the reality of how effective these tools can be. But, I mean, reality is we're not talking about toys, are we? These are pretty serious tools at the top end.
They're definitely not toys, Adam. And I suppose I wanted to start by sort of letting you know a bit of a story. So my old man is actually one of these skeptics. So he's a staunch petrol user of over 25 years, and we used to live on acreage, and it actually took him taking the plunge and using a battery-powered tool to realise just how good they are.
Batteries have gone through a lot of change. Can you tell us a little bit about those big stages of evolution of the battery-powered gear and the point we've reached at the moment?
Ryobi, as a manufacturer, we've been doing garden tools for over 10 years now. So the progression in the technology just in the short time that we've actually been doing these tools has been enormous, and certainly a bit of an understanding of the technology is quite important. So there's one sort of consistent factor that does come across all of these tools. So for starters is the voltage. There can be 12 volt, 18 volt, 36 volt, 80 volt. The one consistent factor across all of these batteries is the amp hour rating, the physical amount of energy within the battery.
One thing I've found important too, and I think this is if folks do start looking at switching over to battery gear, is that the different brands, obviously your batteries are compatible within your range, but it's important to understand that there's entire ecosystems of tools. So I think that's a key thing for people to do is to say, okay, well, I'm going to make this move to battery. Let's have a look at this range, and does it have all the tools within that range that I am likely to need? I think that's what people get confused with too, is that some gear comes with a battery and others are what they often call skin only, and that's where you basically need the battery. So you'll be taking the battery from your other tool and using it, you know, from your line trimmer and using it on your blower, for example. So you need to make sure you're staying within that ecosystem, and that ecosystem has all the different products that you actually potentially might need.
Doing your research is critical. You know, one of our systems has over 100 tools powered off that one battery. Everything from a leaf blower to a mower to a chainsaw, across to an angle grinder, you know, even small little drills and miter saws all run off that one battery. So in terms of considering where you want to invest, having a good understanding of that platform is critical. So, you know, once you're in, then you don't have to keep purchasing batteries. You can use that same battery, which obviously at the end of the day makes it cheaper.
Yeah, and invest is a good word too, because if somebody's looking at one of the battery lawnmowers, one of the good quality ones, you're not talking $100. We're talking $300 or $400 or even $500 for some of these.
Exactly.
Things. Yeah.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And certainly when you're starting off, we definitely do recommend people start off with a kit. Mm. So that includes your battery and charger and your tool. And then from there, it's a lot more cost effective to go back. And if you want to buy a hedge trimmer or, you know, a drill for that matter, you can do that, but you don't have the additional cost of the battery and charger each time.
Yes, you're just buying that skin that you slip the battery into. Now, I understand Correct. You guys have even got a rechargeable ride-on mower now, don't you?
We absolutely do. So a full-size 38-inch cutting deck on the unit, and it will run up to 2 hours or 2 acres of coverage. So, you know, with this type of unit, it is a huge change from a petrol equivalent. You know, you don't have the belts and pulleys associated with a petrol unit. So on a mower deck, one of the most common things, especially ride-ons, is they have drive belts that drive the blades. Mm. And if you suck up a stick or something like that as you're mowing, they can actually get caught in those belts and stretch or snap them. Mm. One of the number one reasons why you actually go back to the mower store to have your ride-on serviced. But our unit doesn't actually have any of these belts or pulleys. So that's a huge factor in itself. beyond the basics of, you know, blades and that type of thing, the consumable components, it really is, from a convenience factor, so much easier to use. You plug it in after you've finished using it, it charges up, and you wait till next time, and away you go to mow again. You know?
This is one of the things I always emphasize in the many articles I've written about garden gear, and we've talked about battery gear, is that the maintenance for the average home gardener, they don't want to have to remember about spark plugs and changing oil and all of that sort of stuff. All you have to remember to do is charge the battery, and you don't have many of the problems with storage. So particularly, and I think this is increasingly relevant with people's properties becoming smaller, they haven't got the storage space. So with a traditional lawnmower, I'll use that as the prime example, you can't stand the thing up because you're going to be leaking petrol and potentially ending up with oil in the cylinders. Whereas with a battery mower, you can do what you want. You can hang the thing up. You can stick it in the back of a cupboard. You can do anything you need.
Correct.
To.
I mean, it's light. It's, you know, it's easy to lift in and out of the back of the car. It's easy to lift in and out of the shed, you know, but people do absolutely, you know, if you clean this thing after you've used it, there is no reason why you couldn't bring it in the house and store it, because there aren't those smells associated, beyond obviously. Exactly right. Mm. It's not going to stink your house out or anything like that. So,
well, I'm very big on making sure that people stay safe when they're working outside too. And one of the things that I find very appealing is the fact that this stuff is a lot quieter. So the vast majority of battery gear you don't even in fact need earmuffs for, which brings you to a second sort of big advantage, is that you can get out there with your mower on a Sunday morning and not annoy the bejesus out of your neighbours.
Absolutely. And look, that's a really, really major one as well. I mean, a really good demo we do in that store level is we'll actually start a mower in front of the customer and continue the sales conversation with them while the mower's
operating. While the mower's running.
and that can be running because you obviously, with all the units, the safety factor is obviously another thing. So you always have to be holding on to the mower in this case that we're talking about. You have to be holding the switch. Let go of that switch, it instantly stops.
It's like
from a safety perspective, that's huge. And you know, beyond that, the weight factor on mowers especially, we're talking up to 10, 15 kilos lighter.
Well, I'm on a small acreage and I use battery gear to do all of my boundaries. So, for instance, all of the line trimming and then the lawnmower underneath all the tricky spots, the clothesline and all those sort of, you know, annoying little fiddly areas. And I love the fact that it is so much easier for me to pick it up and move it around. And when you're doing the boundary fences of an acreage, I tell you, using a big four-stroke line trimmer, it takes it out of you because you're doing a lot of distance. So there's
and also that position of where the motor is, like a line trimmer is a good example. It's sort of much closer to where your face is to a degree, and there's not only the noise, but there's also the fumes associated with that. Whereas a battery powered unit, the noise factor is one, but also the fact that there are zero emissions while you're using the tool.
And if you have solar panels on your roof, you're charging it up, for free, completely environmentally friendly. Hey, now where do you reckon that battery gear is going to go next?
The new units that we have they're in the market now. You know, they're lighter, they're more compact, they're more powerful than ever before. And that comes down to the tools themselves actually being smarter. And, you know, a mower is a good example of that, where we have what's called load sensing technology, where basically as you're running along, if it hits a thicker, tougher patch of grass, it will actually increase the RPM of the motor. And that's as a result of the motor and the battery talking to each other.
Yeah, so you get more runtime and you get better performance.
Now, you get a balance. Yeah.
What is your favorite bit of battery kit, Wade? Come on, what's your favorite out in the garden when you're getting out there?
I'm a really big sucker for chainsaws. The biggest difference I could tell you between a cordless tool and a petrol powered tool is probably most evident in a chainsaw.
Yeah.
The way that it delivers the power is so different. So with a two stroke petrol chainsaw, generally you're revving it really hard. There's all the noise, the fumes, and that power delivery is very, very different. And I guess with a cordless chainsaw, firstly, you know, you've got it in the back of the four-wheel drive, you pull it out and it's always ready to go. You're not choked, you're not primed, you're not, you know, making sure the fuel's fresh, all of that. It's not stinking out the car, but it's completely consistent in its power delivery. And as a result of that, it's actually, they're so much easier to control.
I mentioned safety before, and I think it is worth mentioning too that people do seem to think, for some reason, being battery, they're a little bit more toys, you know. But the fact is, I use my battery powered chainsaw, and it is just astounding, the power of it.
Yep.
And people do still have to wear, you know, safety glasses, gloves,
boots.
So don't think just because it's a battery chainsaw you don't need that safety gear. You do
absolutely
still need to wear
not.
It. Now, just before we wrap up, have you got a couple of quick tips for our listeners on selecting the right battery gear for their needs? What do they need to be looking for?
For starters, what are you planning on doing? So in the case of a line trimmer, are you slashing tall grass? Are you just predominantly edging? Because from those two different applications, there's a different tool potentially that we could recommend as an example. So that's the first question. What are you planning on doing? Secondly, how big is the job, or how long does it currently take you to do the job? This is really important for mowers because you kind of want to know, okay, well, how big is your backyard, or how long does it take you to mow? Then the third one is, what are your expectations of the tool? So for people who are converting from a petrol mower, for example, we would want to try and keep people at a similar power level to that. So if that's the case, we would recommend, if required, that they purchase a 36-volt brushless mower, because that will give them comparable levels of performance.
Yes.
Talking to people is obviously really important, especially the experts down at your local Bunnings store, or if you're lucky enough, we do have a number of area managers or representatives in stores on weekends on Saturdays as well.
Doing demos,
that are branded in Ryobi gear.
I've seen them out there. So basically, if folks don't have the opportunity to do the research before they hit the store, then go in with a checklist of the things that they want to accomplish, and then everything can be fulfilled from that point forwards. All right. Well, Wade King from Ryobi, thank you very much. I'm feeling like getting out there on the tools right now. Hey, guys, can I bail and just go and do some hedges? No, I'm not. Producer's nodding. No, definitely not happening. Thank you, Wade. It's a very exciting evolution, and I think folks do really need to consider the battery gear very carefully next time they're thinking about upgrading some of their power equipment.
Thank you so much, Adam. I really appreciate it.
Gardening by the Moon with Milton Black.
Hi, Milton. Welcome back. How's it going?
Oh, very, very busy in the garden, like everybody at this time of the year, Jenny. But have you had time to get into the garden yourself?
I certainly have.
Good. Well, you know, from the 9th up to the 22nd is a very mixed sort of period for gardening with the moon. But you've got to remember, too, that keep a close eye on all shrubs, annuals and vegetables that need regular watering for those that are having a little bit of difficulty with water. I mean, there's a bit of rain around, but you'll probably get more rain later on in the month and probably into January. But at this stage, bear in mind that watering is as close as possible, you know, to the roots. Just don't sort of give them over the top. But however, the moon's actually in Taurus, and this is a fabulous time for planting above ground crops at the moment, because the moon's waxing up to the full moon on Thursday, the 12th. So it's a fabulous time here for the moon and Taurus for all those above ground crops. Plant those seeds out of the boxes into the garden too at the moment. Do your beans, you can do your peas, your lettuces, anything that grows above the ground. Now, the full moon comes up on Thursday, and the full moon's in Gemini. Now, you just don't plant on a full moon, because that's where the moon and the sun are in opposition, and it really doesn't give any life to the plants at all. So then it goes into Cancer on the 13th, so Friday and Saturday. Absolutely great days for planting below ground crops, because the moon now is starting to move into the waning side. So if you've got those potatoes you want to put in, or if you've got radishes or your beets and things like this, that's the time to put them in on the 13th and 14th. Now, the moon actually on Sunday the 15th enters into Leo at 1:56 in the afternoon. So you can still plant up till about lunchtime on that Sunday if you wish. But that's really not a fertile sign. So you can have a rest on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday of the 16th, 17th and 18th. And what I'd suggest you do on those days, no planting, but just go around and clean up your garden a little bit, take the heads off the roses and the camellias and things like this that are, that need sort of deheading, and all those little sort of fiddly things that you can do, a bit of watering if it requires. Yeah. Now, you've got the last quarter of the moon coming in Virgo at 2:57 on the Thursday the 19th. And also, the moon will then enter Libra that night at 8:04. So no planting at all on the Thursday, the 19th. But get things ready on that day. Get it all ready, because on the 20th and the 21st and 22nd, fabulous days for planting. And it's going to be mainly below the ground crops. But I do feel that also it's a good time to start your spraying and getting things ready for getting rid of those bugs in the garden as well. So you can actually spread your compost, do a little bit of fertilizing and all those things on the 20th, the 21st and the 22nd as well. And the reason I say that you can do both on those days is because here we've got Libra and Scorpio, two of the fertile signs of the zodiac that can take a balance of a little bit of spraying and a little bit of feeding at the same time, and right. also a little bit of below the ground growth. So it's quite favourable. So just remember, up to the 11th, above ground crops, and then you can have from the 13th, 14th, below the ground crops, and then you can go right through water that week, last quarter of the moon, do a little bit of fertilizing and that right from the 20th up to the 22nd. But it's a good good garden week for most things. Just as a matter of interest,
yeah.
Did you hear about that bloke that buried $100,000 in his back garden?
Well, if I'd heard about him, Milton, I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be elsewhere.
Well, I'll tell you why he did it. He wanted to make his soil a little richer.
Oh, my goodness.
See you next week, Jen.
Okay. Take care.
Well, that was another great episode, Jen. I just want to rush out into the garden myself.
Oh, I'm not stopping you. Off you go. Adam, where can people find you?
They can find me in the garden, or they can look me up on YouTube. Just search Adam Woodham. And I'll pop up there, no problem at all, or on Instagram, of course.
And if you want more garden inspiration before the next episode, you can pick up the latest copy of Better Homes and Gardens magazine at selected supermarkets and news agencies.
So we'll see you next time, Jen.
You bet.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.